There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Long live the king.
Hey, you're listening to Known For, a filmography podcast with me, Becca, and my co-host.
Hey, this is Bob Shoy.
So we've been watching lots of Lawrence Fishburne movies recently, which was your choice, wasn't it, Bob?
It was.
How come you chose Lawrence Fishburne? What drew you to him?
I am always happy to see him turn up in a film. Mm-hmm. It's like a bit of a treat.
Yeah.
I like, for example, like a fairly recent film he was in. He was like in Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Okay.
As like a supporting role.
Yeah.
So when I go and see Ant-Man and the Wasp and then Lawrence Fishburne shows up, I go, oh, it's him.
Yeah.
Like, I'm always happy to see him.
I feel like a lot of the stuff I've seen him in, he's been like a supporting role.
Mm.
So, and I've always been like, oh, he's like really good.
Yeah.
But he's not like the main, one of the main like protagonists or anything. So this was quite cool to see more of his back catalogue and see him in like different roles and stuff like that with more of a prominent role.
Yeah, and even in, he is in, we watched quite a few where he was like the prominent role, the main role.
Mm.
But even like a lot of his big films, he is a supporting role.
Yeah, he's still.
He's a supporting actor.
Yeah.
And it's a real shame because when he gets a chance to be a lead actor,
he's
really good.
Yeah.
And watching through, because like I say, I've seen a lot of his films, but a lot of his older ones I hadn't seen. And there were some like glaring omissions from his catalogue that I hadn't seen.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, when I was watching them, I was like, he's well underrated.
Mm.
Like, he might be one of the most underrated actors around.
Yeah. I feel like there was like recurring themes to a lot of his movies that we sort of like noticed.
Yeah. Okay. So what was something that you thought he was maybe typecast or at least like they lent on?
So I feel like he always plays like a really intellectual character.
Mm-hmm.
Even if he's comes from like a really underprivileged background, he always seems to be quite
he's very well spoken.
Yeah,
he has like an authoritative voice.
Yeah, he's always like very knowledgeable.
Mm-hmm.
And also a lot of his films are to do with like racial prejudice.
Yeah, that was something that came up quite a lot.
Mm.
I've written here that he often, I noticed he was a mentor figure.
Yeah.
Either literally in some films like Searching for Bobby Fischer or something,
yeah.
Keeler and the Bee,
mm-hmm.
or kind of just like even in like Boys in the Hood, where he's the guy's dad.
Yeah.
He's very like his mentor.
Yeah.
And he always takes on that mentor role.
Yeah.
And I guess it's because he has that, he has a great voice. Like it's really soothing, but also very stern at the same time.
It's like authoritative.
Yeah. Like really.
But in like a warm way.
Yeah. He's. Like I would take instructions from him.
I want him to do IKEA instruction audio books.
Yeah, make it tolerable. I got an interesting fact about Lawrence Fishburne.
Right.
Did you know, I just read this today.
Yeah.
He is a founding member of the Guggenheim Motorcycle Club.
Wow.
Which is a group of bikers that arrange rides to art museums around the world.
That's amazing. When can I join?
That's pretty cool, right?
Where do they ride from?
I don't know. All over. They have meets and then drive to art museums.
That's so good. I love that.
So yeah, Lawrence Fishburne, he was super, super underrated, and I really, really enjoyed watching some of these films that I hadn't seen.
I'd not, like, there's a big few films that he's, like, known for, mm-hmm. And we'll talk about that in a second when we talk about his, like, IMDb known for,
mm-hmm.
but, like, a lot of stuff they'd done I'd never heard of.
Right, okay.
I probably should have, but...
And obviously we didn't watch his entire back catalogue. Yeah. We'd seen a lot already, and then we picked out some, recommended to us, and if he's nominated for some, like, ones that stood out, we watched. So we watched a fair few.
Yeah.
And as usual, we'll go through the ones we watched.
But yeah, the stuff that I hadn't seen, there were some that I really, really enjoyed.
I on the whole, really enjoyed a lot of the ones we watched.
Mm. So I was going to do his top.
Yeah, let's do it. So what are currently his known for?
So this has changed again. Like, this changes quite frequently from when I first looked. But it's currently The Matrix, 1999. Matrix Reloaded, 2003. Contagion, 2011. And Mystic River, 2003.
Okay. Now, that's an interesting selection.
Mm.
I think, unlike the last few where we've kind of been a little bit like, well, the known for a pretty good evaluation of this actor, actually. I think for this, ours is going to be wildly different from that.
Right. Yeah. I also think, well, the other one that sometimes swaps out is like Mystic River for the final Matrix.
Yeah, exactly.
Revolution.
You don't need all the Matrix films in there.
Exactly.
He's so much better than just like Morpheus is an amazing character. And I love those films, but he's more than that. And I think a lot of times people still think of him as, oh, it's Morpheus.
I think also like they're probably the most famous films that he's been in. Maybe.
Do you think so?
Well, like some of them.
We'll go through them, but I think there's some.
And I think that's why they're in there.
There's one especially that I'm shocked isn't known for, but we'll come to it as we go.
Yeah, okay.
But let's talk about the ones that are there. So we'll just start with The Matrix. We'll just talk about all of The Matrix films.
Okay.
Do you like The Matrix? Matrix?
Yeah, I love it. I love The Matrix. I haven't seen it for a long time though, so I think my memory's going to be a little bit like...
Yeah, we didn't get a chance to rewatch it for this, but I've seen those films a lot.
Yeah, I think we have to go back and watch them.
Especially the first one, I've seen a lot.
I think I'm just going to choose like Keanu Reeves next, like just because I want to rewatch The Matrix.
The first one is like... a perfect sci-fi film.
Yeah.
It might be like just the best straight up sci-fi film.
Hmm. Yeah, it's really good.
Do you remember...
Like the concept of it was like...
Oh, it was mind-blowing.
Yeah.
Do you remember the first time you watched it? Did you watch it when it first came out?
No, I was only 9 when it came out.
Okay.
So like it would have been 11. A bit old for me.
So I saw it when it came out on VHS.
I was probably like 14 or 15 maybe when I saw it.
I was like 11, 12. If I was 11 when it came out, I was probably 12 when it was out on VHS. Because I remember it was such a big deal.
Yeah.
But I was slightly too young to really notice what the big deals were in films.
Yeah.
But I went to stay at my dad's flat when he got his flat that I moved into with him. And it was before I moved in with him. And there was a Blockbusters down the road. So we went down to Blockbusters. And it was like the big new release.
Mm.
Oh, let's see what all the fuss is about.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a little bit young to like get all of it, but I still remember it blowing me away.
Mm.
And I remember just watching it like in silence. And then when it finished, it was kind of late and I went straight to bed.
Mm.
And but I was thinking about it in bed.
Yeah.
And the next morning I was just like, I couldn't stop thinking about this film and I was blown away by it. And then when I came through, dad and his partner, they were talking about, oh, I didn't really like it. What do you think? Nah, it's overrated. Yeah, right. And they didn't really like it. And I was just sitting there thinking, it was so good. Like my child brain was just going, oh my god, I thought it was like amazing. It blew my mind.
He didn't
really like it, but my dad's not big on sci-fi at all.
I loved it. It was so like futuristic. It was so cool. It was so like...
And the effects were like... They still look cool now.
Like the underground like scene of it and stuff. Like they're trying to like evade like shit. And yeah, it was so good. Yeah.
His quote about the character of Morpheus... which I loved. I pulled this out because I thought you'd like it as well. Because he said when he first watched the screening for the actors' screening of it, when it was all cut first, he was like he found himself quite scary in it.
Right.
He was like, oh man, Morpheus is scary. Even though he was playing it, he was
like foreboding.
He was so like detached from the character when watching it. He was like his laid back, normal self. But that character's quite stern and foreboding, exactly. Yeah. So he said when he watched it, he was like, whoa.
Yeah.
He found him quite an intimidating character. And he said that he liked playing Morpheus because he said Morpheus is like playing Obi-Wan Kenobi and Darth Vader if they were one character.
Oh, yeah, that's pretty accurate. Nice.
But yeah, this is like, we talk about him being cast as mentor characters. This is like the ultimate mentor character.
Yeah, definitely. And I don't want to jump to John Wick too quickly, but like him and Keanu, like later on, teaming up again.
Mm.
John Wick, it's nice to see. He does that with a couple of actors and actresses, doesn't
he?
Like,
yeah.
Kind of, they gets them like back.
I've got two or three actors on here that he's worked with multiple times.
Yeah.
But yeah, so Morpheus, such a great iconic character. I can't see any form of any Lawrence Fishburne podcast where they're not saying The Matrix is like
I still,
up there for him.
Like you said earlier, I still just like associate Lawrence Fishburne with Morpheus. Like,
yeah,
it's just
I think
the go-to
does.
Like thing. I wonder if he just feels like it's hard to shake.
That's the thing when you play such an iconic character. Because I, in a way, I almost think Morpheus is more iconic than Neo.
Yeah.
Even though he's not the main character, he's like so memorable as a character.
Yeah.
And he's just all over that film. And a lot of people aren't fond, if even if they love the first one, a lot of people don't like the second and third.
Right.
I am not a big fan of the second, I'll be honest.
Mm.
I think it just goes, I don't know, some part of me loves how over the top it gets.
Mm.
And some part of me is like, oh, come on. Like, some of the scenes are so long and it's just like escalation
right.
upon
yeah.
escalation. And the third one's even more hated, but I actually prefer the third one.
Okay.
Because at least it's different. It's
yeah.
much more in the real world and you've got the war
yeah.
in the real world going on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which I found interesting. And it's really always cool to see Morpheus in the real world with his like, almost like tribal leader.
Yeah.
I love seeing him in that mode because it's so different to the way you see him in The Matrix with his sunglasses and stuff.
Yeah.
He's like cool and towering in The Matrix. When he's in the real world, he's like tribal leader, which
yeah,
is like
yeah.
really cool.
Mm. I just, yeah, I love it.
But what do you like the second and third ones as well, though? What are your opinion of those?
I haven't seen them for a long time. I think it's been, when have we ever seen them together?
Yeah, I've watched them with you.
It must have been over like 7 or 8 years ago, though, probably.
I'd say maybe 7 years ago.
So
this is the last time I watched them, but I've seen them so many times up to then.
I've not seen them that much, you see. Mm. I've probably seen them like 2 or 3 times maximum.
Okay, the
but
first
like,
one I've seen loads. Second and third, I've probably only seen
yeah.
2 or 3 times.
I think I need to rewatch them again.
Okay.
Before being like, what one's my favourite? Because I'm not. I think the first one like sticks in my mind because it's just was like so groundbreaking at the time, like when I first saw it. But I don't know. I think I need to see them in like quick succession as well, like one after the other, again to like make my decision.
A good Lawrence Fishburne fact about it. Do you remember the character for The Matrix, Cass?
No.
She's one of like, you know, they have that their team of rebels.
Right.
She played by...
Has she got blonde hair?
No.
Oh.
It's this woman.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Yeah.
She's played by an actress called Gina Torres.
Right.
Lawrence Fishburne ended up marrying her.
Whoa. What, after the films?
So I think they were married by the time the second one.
Oh, wow, cool.
Going. Yeah. And he's got 2 children from his previous marriage and 1 child with her.
Are they still married?
Yeah.
Oh, wow, that's so cool.
So that's cool. Yeah.
Huh.
That's pretty cool, right? And yeah, it's a little fact. The only other little fact I've got about The Matrix and Lawrence Fishburne is that during the training for the second one, he broke his arm.
Oh, no.
It's pretty intense training for those films, though.
Jeez.
Yeah. So that's The Matrix. Even if you don't like them, they are one of a kind.
Yeah.
And I'll be interested to see what happens with that fourth one. There's a fourth one being made.
Yeah, that's fairly exciting. All after all this time as well.
As of this recording, I haven't heard anything about Lawrence Fishburne returning for that, though. So
yeah, but his stuff's quite under the radar.
I know Keanu's in it, and I don't know what else. I'd heard all sorts of rumours.
Right.
The last crazy rumour I heard is that, oh, it's like a prequel story, and it has like John Boyega playing a young Morpheus and stuff like that.
Oh, weird.
So who knows? That film could be anything. It might be prequels and...
I like John Boyega, but I don't see him as a young Morpheus.
No, but then we don't know what Morpheus was like when he was young.
True.
So.
Do you want to know what it is? The Matrix is everywhere. It is all around us. Even now, in this very room. You can see it when you look out your window or when you turn on your television. You can feel it when you go to work, when you go to church, when you pay your taxes. It is the world that has been pulled over your eyes to blind you from the truth. This is your last chance. After this, there is no turning back. You take the blue pill. The story ends. You wake up in your bed and believe whatever you want to believe. You take the red pill. You stay in Wonderland. And I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes. Remember, all I'm offering is the truth, nothing more.
So what else have we got on the Known Force?
Contagion.
Right, okay.
Next one.
What do you think of this one?
Which I watched the first time.
Yes,
I really liked it.
Yeah.
It's like, it follows like a number of people though. So he, again, he's like not a main character. I would say
he is maybe one of the main characters because there's so many characters in it, but they start dying and
yeah,
there's maybe like six main characters.
He's the one who's sort of like, is the thread that binds them all together.
Yeah, I would say so. Like, so in a way, he's the main character, but it's one of them films where no one's really the
main character.
I don't
feel like he gets the most screen time though.
It's kind of like him and... what other actor is in it? Who plays the dad? I'm drawing a blank on it.
Matt Damon.
I think of him and Matt Damon as sort of the main two characters.
Kate Winslet.
Yeah, she's not a main character.
Jude Law plays a bizarre Australian.
This is what I wanted to say about this film. It's like there's one cartoon character in a cast of normal human beings. Jude Law's character is so ridiculous in that film.
He's a bucktooth Australian wearing like a flat cap.
Yeah,
and it's the weirdest thing.
It's like a cartoon character in the middle of a serious film.
Do you think they just got the like English stereotype like completely wrong?
I don't know
like the bad teeth and like the flat cap, but then he just had to have an Australian accent.
I don't know what is going on. Maybe he was like, because he's British, maybe he was like, I'm sick of these stereotypes. I'm not even going to do an English accent for this.
Maybe.
Anyway. But yeah, it was his character was weird and made the film weird, but... It was an interesting idea, like watching a disease spread and how it affects so many people and how quickly that can happen and how you would...
Yeah, like the domino effect of it. Yeah. Just like, okay, so it started in Hong Kong, didn't it?
It was definitely China. I don't think it was Hong Kong, but it spread through the ports
of Hong
Kong.
Yeah, no, it's Hong Kong.
So it spreads out of Hong Kong.
Yeah.
And it just shows you the journey of how...
It's pretty scary.
Patient zero... How big that can spread if there's no cure, and how the world deals with curing a new disease. They have no idea how to. Like basically a modern day plague film, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a bit Planet of the Apes-y.
Yeah.
Of the new Planet of the Apes films.
But it's quite like sobering thought.
Yeah.
And basically like Fishburne plays like the head of the sort of disease.
Yeah, he's like a disease control guy.
In America, it's basically just like if anything happens, and he's basically orchestrating the whole thing, and they test the disease like in their labs and stuff like that, and it's all under control.
This is another like stereotype for him casting, though, I find, where even if he isn't a mentor, he's like someone in a position of power.
Yeah.
He's always like police chiefs, head of such and such, like head of a newspaper, even in like Superman, he's Perry White. Do you know what I mean? He's always like leader.
Even in Assault on Precinct 13, he was like the head of like a criminal gang.
Yeah,
he's like the
leader.
Mastermind. Yeah.
But he wouldn't look right. He's quite an imposing looking guy. He's quite broad. He's quite tall.
Yeah.
He wouldn't look right as like a right hand man. Like
no.
A crony, a second in command. He looks like a leader.
Mm. So, I did quite like Contagion.
It was a very middle of the road film for me. I'm surprised it's in his
top
known for films.
Maybe I think that's what I was saying about. Like, I think that one's in there just because it's one of the most famous films.
I think well known famous. I think it was heavily marketed when it came out, and so a lot of people were aware of it. And because there's so many characters, but he's one of the main, the only characters you sort of come back to all the way through it.
Yeah.
So. And then what's the other one?
The other one is Mystic River.
Mystic River, okay.
Which we watched the other night.
Yeah, I had seen this one before.
Tell us, Mr. Boyle, how did you get the blood in your car? What blood? Let's start with the front seat. What blood type are you?
B negative.
Yeah? That's the match we got.
Well, there you go.
Not quite. Blood in the trunk of the car wasn't B negative.
I don't know anything about any blood in the trunk of the car.
No idea how half a pint of blood got in the trunk of your car, huh?
None.
This is not the way you want to go, Dave. Well, how's that going to look in court, I mean? You not knowing how someone else's blood got in the trunk of your car.
Yeah, directed by Clint Eastwood, mm-hmm. which was pretty cool. I'm just trying to think what Fishburne actually did in it.
He was the partner. The cop partner. Like, he was a real main character, innit?
Oh, yeah. So he was like... So it's like three kids growing up. So it like flashes back basically to like them growing up.
Mm.
Basically one of them gets abducted and then it's like, you know, 40 years later, 30 years later or something like that. And then it's them.
It's about three friends.
Yeah.
Who, when they were younger, it flashes back to them as children. When they were younger, like there's like a tragic event that happens between them. And when it flashes forward to them
current time.
And how they drifted apart. And they all live in the same town still. Yeah. But certain events start bringing them back together again. These guys who have not talked for years and it's the uncomfortable relationship between them. And one of them's a cop. And his partner is Lawrence Fishburne, who's the sergeant as well.
Yeah.
One of them's a criminal. And one of them's like a troubled family man who's still traumatized by what happened to him when he was a child.
So definitely wouldn't consider this in like the top four, known for Fishburne.
This was a really big film though.
Was it?
Yeah.
Fishburne is like a side character though, because he's like the main, one of the main three guys, like backup basically. And he's there for quite a bit of it.
I would say it was like equal screen time for the, I would say he was one of the four because the main plot is the investigation.
Yeah.
And he is always with the guy who's the running the investigation.
Mm.
And he's...
Most of the time.
I feel like, yeah. But again, even if... Okay, so he's the fourth main character. That's still the fourth main character.
Mm.
But then it's a film where there's not many characters, so it's like...
But then it's like the same as like the wife. Well, anyway. I wouldn't...
This was a big film. This was a big Oscar nominated film.
Yeah, again, like another one that's like... I think it's up there because it was a big film, but not necessarily he was like a main...
This is really popular with the critics as well. This was sort of a really highly rated film and stuff.
Mm.
And this is at a time film. Where Clint Eastwood was really sort of making big films. Like all his films were kind of like, you know, big, well-respected releases.
It's a really good storyline.
Yeah, it's really interesting. It's weird because I feel like maybe either it's one of them ones that ages badly on you or I wasn't in the right frame of mind to enjoy it because... Like I said, I've seen this twice.
Right.
And when we watched it a few nights ago, it was the first time I'd seen it for... I probably watched it about 8 years ago.
Right.
Maybe more, maybe 9 years ago.
Yeah.
And I remembered almost nothing from it. It was like I was watching it for the first time again.
Mm.
So either it's one of them ones where, like, you just forget about it. It's like quite... You forget about it quite quickly.
Right.
Or, like, I was just, like... Maybe not mature enough to enjoy it because it's quite gripping.
Yeah, it kept me guessing like the whole time. Yeah. I like didn't know where it was gonna end up.
Yeah,
like until the very end, I was like, "What is going on?"
And like, it's a crime investigation, and those sort of films can be really engrossing and gripping, and you're watching them uncover the case and you're seeing it from all angles. And I really like those sort of films, even though I don't watch that many of them. So you would have thought it would have stuck with me more because it's a really good example of that sort of film.
Yeah.
But yeah, it just like washed over me. But watching again, I was like, oh, this is great. And it was like I was watching it for the first time again.
Yeah.
So yeah, so they're his top, his known four.
Mm-hmm.
I think what we come down on at the end of what we think should be his known fours are going to be...
A little bit different.
A little bit different to that. For people who haven't listened to the show before, this is what we do. We go through the four films that IMDb suggests the actor is most known for. We sort of go through their filmography of the ones we watched, and at the end we're going to come back and say these are actually the four they should be known for.
Yeah.
And also which ones are our personal favourites, because that can be a different thing as well.
Yeah.
So let's have a little break and go through the filmography.
Mm-hmm. 1979, Apocalypse Now.
Now, we didn't rewatch this film.
No.
Did you even know he was in this film?
No.
Even though we've watched this film?
Yeah.
I have seen this film twice, Apocalypse Now. I really do like this film.
Yeah.
It's a long watch, But I never realised it was Lawrence Fishburne in this film.
Right.
Until I was looking through his IMDb, like today, preparing for this episode, and I was like, Lawrence Fishburne wasn't in that? And then when I looked up some clips and read about it, I was like, oh, yes, he was. He was 14 years old.
What?
He is the young guy on the gunship, on the gunboat with them. And I've got a little clip for you of him on the gunboat here, Becca, which I'm just going to show you.
Pictures, yeah. Oh, my God.
As soon as I watched this, I was like, oh, yeah, I remember that character.
I remember thinking he was 14.
Yeah.
No way.
And this is him dancing to I Can't Get No Satisfaction. And he's the young guy with the team. Who, spoilers, eventually gets shot on when he's manning the gun. And they're like, and you get the really emotional scene of like, there's a voicemail message from his mother. Like, I can't wait to see you when you get home. That bit was actually recorded by Lawrence Fishburne's real mum.
I can't believe he's 14 in this.
Well.
Oh, my God.
You can't believe he's 14 in it. The interesting thing is, he lied about his age to get on it.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know how old he said he was, but he said that was the lie that launched his career.
Oh, my God. Amazing.
Yeah. So he gets on a Francis Ford Coppola film, like, straight away at the age of 14 from lying about his age.
Wow. That's so good.
Yeah. He was 14 at the start of production. Now, that film has a, like, famously troubled production. I think it ran for, like, 2 years.
Right.
So he was like 16 by the end of it. But yeah.
I think I remember clocking him when we watched it.
I think I have like a vague memory of that as well, but I like didn't stick with me and I didn't think of it again.
No, yeah, that's so crazy.
Yeah. Lot of crazy stuff going on the set of Apocalypse Now. I mean, I've watched the, can't remember the name of it, the documentary about making of Apocalypse Now.
Yeah.
We've watched it. It's as long as the film itself. And there's multiple books and it was famously troubled production. Everyone was sort of losing their mind on it. Like Sheen had a heart attack making that film.
My God.
Loads of people doing drugs. Dennis Hopper, like notorious crazy man, actually got the young Lawrence Fishburne hooked on heroin during the making of that film.
What?
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Hell yeah. Yeah. So
did he get off it?
No. Yeah. No, he's still on it to this day.
Hell.
So that film is crazy. If you want some interesting history, watch the Apocalypse Now documentary.
Why?
I'm just going to look up the name of that so I can recommend it. Hearts of Darkness. Yeah, watch Hearts of Darkness, the Apocalypse, the making of Apocalypse Now. It's really interesting. And yeah, there's interesting books and stuff about it. It's a very famous, troubled production that somehow made a great Vietnam War movie.
Jesus.
The movie
sounds as fucking terrible as the actual war.
So it's one of three times that he plays a Vietnam vet, though.
Oh, yeah.
So he does in our next film.
Right.
That we're going to talk about. He says, oh, yeah, I was in
yeah.
that stuff.
Uh-huh.
And he's like, you never want to go to war.
Yeah.
He's a black man's got no place
in
the war. And then he also, we didn't get around to watching it, but in Last Flag Flying, which
came
out
recent.
Only in 2017, I think.
Yeah.
He plays like an aging Vietnam vet in that.
Yeah.
So, but the next film, the one where he also plays the Vietnam vet is Boys in the Hood.
Yeah, 1991.
Mm-hmm.
This is the first time I've seen this.
Same. Very famous film.
Yeah.
Heard about this loads. Heard it referenced loads. I even knew Lawrence Fishburne's like character's name, like Furious Styles. I heard that character referred to in media.
So he played the dad. Again, sort of like a mentor, like knowledgeable. He's quite like learned character.
Yeah. It feels like on the block they live on, he's sort of kind of respected as like a really intelligent guy.
Mm.
But yeah, it's about... you know, growing up in the ghetto in like the early 90s, late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah, I really like this. I can't believe Ice Cube's in it as well.
Yeah, I really like this film.
Yeah.
It was way more like touching and heartwarming than I expected it to be.
Yeah.
I thought it was going to glorify the like ghetto life. Yeah. I thought that's what it was about.
Right.
Having no...
He actually, again, like part of it, Lawrence Fishburne in... He sort of takes him out to in the middle of the ghetto and is just like trying to, he's like starting to chat to people.
This is why the ghetto's like it is. This is how they're trying
keeping
to
you
keep
down.
Us down.
Yeah, all that kind of stuff.
This is how you can be better.
Mm.
Ain't nobody from outside bringing down the property value. It's these folk shooting each other and selling that crack rock and shit.
Well, how you think the crack rock gets into the country? We don't own any planes. We don't own no ships. But we are not the people who are flying and floating that shit in here. I know every time you turn on the TV, that's what you see, black people selling the rock, pushing the rock, pushing the rock. Yeah, I know. But that wasn't a problem as long as it was here. Wasn't a problem until it was in Iowa and it showed up on Wall Street where there are hardly any black people. Now, if you want to talk about guns, why is it that there's a gun shop on almost every corner in this community?
Why?
Tell you why. For the same reason that there's a liquor store on almost every corner in the black community. Why? They want us to kill ourselves. You go out to Beverly Hills, you don't see that shit. But they want us to kill ourselves. Yeah, the best way you can destroy a people, you take away their ability to reproduce themselves.
Yeah.
Who is it that's dying out here on these streets every night? Y'all.
Yeah.
Young brothers like yourselves.
What am I supposed to do? Fool roll up, try to smoke me? I'm gonna shoot the motherfucker if he don't kill me first.
You're doing exactly what they want you to do. You have to think, young brother, about your future. Huh?
It's really good. It was almost, it was like the film was a message saying, you know, you can be better. Like you can.
You don't have to.
This is the reality of it.
Yeah.
And only you can change your own reality.
Mm.
And it's a really, I thought this was a really good film.
Yeah.
And this was really his breakthrough film.
Because
between Apocalypse Now and this, it was like a lot of small parts, TV acting, stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then this was like a major role. And he's really good in it. Really good. And it was like they found the type of character that works for him already in a film that early for him. He's playing that mentor.
So he's playing Cuba Gooding Jr.'s like father, but actually in real life, I think they're only a few years apart.
Six years older.
Yeah, which is crazy, and he does look young in it. They sort of tried to dress him up a bit.
Well, he's supposed to be a young dad.
Yeah,
but at the same time, like they tried to make him look older, I guess, and Cuba look a bit younger.
Yeah,
because Cuba's playing someone who's like a little bit younger than he actually is.
Yeah,
as well. But the relationship between him and Cuba was really good.
Yeah.
In it.
Yeah, I really like their chemistry.
Yeah, really good. And this was the first time that he acted alongside Angela Bassett.
Yeah.
Who plays his ex-wife in it.
Mm-hmm.
Who he acted alongside two more times, which we'll come to. But he gets along really well with her, really likes acting alongside her. And I think they actually only have one scene together in this because most of it's like phone calls.
Yeah, there's only...
only one scene where they're actually together, right?
It's like a couple. There's like once in the car and then when he drops the son off, when she drops the son off and then like later
on. Oh, I'm thinking of... Yeah, I forgot about those. I'm thinking of when they meet in the cafe.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he gets his cafe au lait.
Yeah. So I really like this. It was an awesome film. He was really great in it. Definitely like, you can tell sort of like a pivotal like moment in his career.
So the next one we watched is What's Love Got to Do With It?
Mm-hmm.
And this was working alongside Angela Bassett again.
Yeah.
And actually the interesting thing about that is that he was offered this role. Right. He plays Ike Turner in this. This is the biography of Tina Turner and Ike Turner.
Yeah.
And he was offered the role of Ike Turner with this script. He turned it down 5 times.
Whoa.
They really wanted him for it.
Yeah.
And he kept turning it down.
Right. Why is that?
He didn't want to play the role, I guess, because he's such a villainous character.
Yeah, he's pretty mean in it.
But then when he changed his mind when he heard that Angela Bassett had been cast.
Oh, amazing.
So that's what made him change his mind.
Right.
When they cast her as Tina Turner, he was like, oh, okay, yeah, like she's great. I really want to work with her again.
Yeah.
It'll work. I'm in.
Because he is really villainous in this.
He is. And it's a really great portrayal of him.
Yeah.
Because he starts so cool and so smooth and you really like him at the beginning of the film. Yeah. And when he's like performing in the club and he's singing, he's not dubbed over with Lawrence Fishburne singing in this.
Mm.
And he's great on stage.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh man, like,
and
he's
the
man.
And then you see it sort of like the decline.
Yeah, and then he's monstrous.
And like, he sort of can't take that, I guess, like Tina Turner sort of like outshines him.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it just gets like really you see the sort of like nasty underbelly of it all.
It definitely doesn't pull any punches.
How'd you get in here, Ike? What do you want, huh?
Hey, it's a big night for the land of May. I come to see the show, just like everybody else.
How'd you get past security?
Oh, come on now. You know me better than that. Okay, I told you it wasn't over. I told you you was gonna see me again. Here I am, big and bold as shit. You ain't believe me. Thought you was gonna get away from me. Thought a nigga like me was gonna let you get away from me. You can't get away from me, and I'm in here. Now you wanna act like you don't even know me.
Yeah, I know you, Ike. I know you real well, all right?
All right, then.
Yeah, I really like this film. Just because I didn't really know much about Tina Turner's, like, history. Mm-hmm. And it's definitely like she sort of struggled through this time.
Yeah.
Like being sort of like just like scared.
I knew that Ike Turner was like a piece of work.
Yeah.
And I knew, you know, that all the terrible things that he'd done. Because I think that's just something that's sort of in pop culture. I've never really been into like Tina Turner's music. I don't know anything about her, but I knew that she was married to Ike Turner and he was a real piece of work.
Yeah.
And it was like upsetting, but interesting to see that and learn about that.
Yeah, definitely.
And like he was really good in such a horrible role.
Yeah.
And he said that after actually playing this character, he like women wouldn't go near him.
Oh, really?
He said like women gave him what he quoted as the evil eye for like a good few years after doing this film.
Really?
Yeah.
Jeez.
But this is the film that he was nominated for his Oscar for.
Yeah, rightly so, because he's amazing.
Yeah, him and Angela Bassett, they were both nominated for this film.
Yeah.
Neither won.
Oh.
And it is the only nomination for either of them as
right.
well.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, this is his big... This is why I was surprised this one wasn't in his known for.
Yeah.
Because it's the one that he was like nominated for like so many awards for.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, what's Love got to do with it?
Also, I'd say he's got like a much bigger role in this. Like he's definitely like...
He's co-lead.
Co-lead, yeah.
He's got a fairly big role in Boys in the Hood.
Yeah.
But it's still a supporting role.
Yeah.
Because it's Cuba Gooding Jr. who has the lead.
Yeah.
But then he is the father and he is there all the time. He has like a big presence in that film. This is the first time I think where he had a proper lead.
Yeah.
Because it's a biography of him and Tina.
Yeah.
So, of course, he's got a lead. But yeah.
Mm.
This was a good film.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
So we watched, next we watched Searching for Bobby Fischer, which also came out in 93, mm-hmm. which I loved. Like,
oh, you really
like
this
yeah,
one?
Yeah, such a good film. So mm-hmm. it's basically about like a young chess player.
Yeah.
And Fishburne plays sort of like a bit of a mentor. He's playing chess in like, I think it's, is it set in New York? Yeah, like New York.
Can't remember where it's set.
In a park somewhere anyway. In American, they always have stuff in the park. So yeah, he basically befriends this young like chess player in a park, and sort of despite his parents being like, oh, you know, he's just like a bit of a dodgy guy from the park or whatever, like a bit yeah. of a geezer. And also his mentor. That
well, he has a real mentor who yeah. his parents like employ.
Yeah.
Because they see his talent, this child's talent for chess.
Yeah.
And how good he is at it naturally. And they're like, okay, if he's that good naturally, we need to have him properly mentored.
Yeah.
And he can enter the championship.
But the kid actually loves just playing in the park with yeah. like all these random people and stuff.
He likes the sort of like street hustle of like, you know, jive talking and yeah. like, oh, that's how you're playing it, is
and
it?
Also,
is that what
like,
you're doing?
I think they talk about like speed chess.
Yes. Yeah.
Which he's sort of like discouraged to do professionally, yeah. like if you actually want to be any good kind of thing, you've got to play the long game sort of yeah. thing. But like in the park, they just play like the speed chess, and he's kind of like the likes it. And Lawrence Fishburne's character's like encouraging him and yeah. stuff like that. And
because it's so, Ben Kingsley who plays the actual mentor,
yeah,
who they employ, and he's kind of teaching him in a dry way. These are the tactics. This is what
yeah,
you need to do.
But you've got to know like every move that anyone did and all this yeah. kind of stuff.
But it's the lore of. Like the street.
Lawrence Fishburne's more like the soul of chess.
Yeah. And it's him who actually makes him interested in the first place. Because yeah. when he first sees him playing it in the park, he's yeah. like, I want to play that. I want to learn that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's but, that style that he likes.
He's not got a massive role, I don't think.
No,
like,
he's not.
Quite a
he's
small
like,
role.
It's a small role. It's a continuous presence through the film.
Yeah.
But he just pops up every now and then.
Mm.
As almost like in the back, it's almost like intentionally in the background, like this is what the boy wants.
Yeah.
But it's not, it's out of his reach because he's discouraged from going to the park to play with like the hoodlums, I guess.
Yeah.
What's that?
Schliemann attack.
Schliemann attack? Where'd you learn that from? A book?
No, my teacher taught me.
Oh, your teacher? Well, forget it. Play like you used to, from the gut. Get your pawns rolling on the queen side. Come and get me.
Put it out. Josh is playing.
See, he didn't teach you how to win. He taught you how not to lose. That's nothing to be proud of. You're playing not to lose, Josh. You've got to risk losing. You've got to risk everything. You've got to go to the edge of defeat. That's where you want to be, boy. On the edge of defeat.
But
what? Play. Never play the board, always the man. You got to play the man playing the board. Play me. I'm your opponent. You have to beat me, not the board. Beat me.
You're not who I have to play.
You're playing me now. Come on, beat me.
So I like the film a lot. I was surprised that we sort of put it down as a Fishburne film, really, because I probably wouldn't consider it a massive Fishburne
well,
film
he's
at
in
all.
It.
Yeah, I know he is in it, but I wouldn't think of it as he's not. It's not going to be in the known for. Let's put it that way.
Okay.
He's not in it that much.
Mm-hmm. So after that, he did a few like TV movies, basically.
Yeah.
First of which was the Tuskegee Airmen.
Yep. Which is, I think. It's like another one, like we said, with the like racial prejudice kind of theme.
Yeah, he kind of was way into this at this point.
Yeah.
Because this and the next two all tackle race.
Yeah.
And there's two TV movies and one regular movie. The two TV movies are very much intertwined. They're both set in Tuskegee.
Yeah.
And the first is the Tuskegee Airmen.
Which is basically about the US Air Force employing like recruiting
yeah.
like black pilots for this sort of like trial program
yeah.
to see if they were up to scratch basically
yeah
in a
and
base.
There was like lots of naysayers yeah. like oh, we don't want like black people on the Air Force and things like that. And the base at Tuskegee.
And they sort of kept getting left behind a lot. They were like, we're just sort of doing like really mundane stuff.
Yeah.
And it's almost like, it was like a vicious circle because it was like, we're not seeing any success because we're not in the action sort of thing. So like, how can we prove ourselves if you're not letting us do it kind of thing? So
they ended up being more of like an escort pilots, but then they ended up being
escort
pilots around, and like people would actually request them. I guess it's one of those things where like if you have to work so much harder to get your place, because instantly just for being black they would have been prejudiced against them for like, well, these guys can't fly planes.
Yeah, yeah.
So when they had to fight to get to that point,
they're already amazing.
They were such good pilots that they were the best of the best. And I actually really like this film.
Yeah, me too.
It's a TV movie, so that you can see the budget restraints in places. But the story is really good.
Yeah.
And it is like a historical drama, biographical thing.
Well, also, I think like the TV movie thing kind of lends itself to that like historical, like World War II kind of thing anyway, because it's all of those films. Well, most of those films, like if it's on a budget, it's sort of like, well, it's a bit more like authentic kind of thing. So yeah, I did really like it. I thought also like Fishburne's got quite a big role in this one. He's like,
oh yeah, he's like the lead man.
Yeah, main character. So
yeah, he's really like the like hotshot pilot.
Yeah.
And
this, well, he's just the one. He's like quite level headed throughout the whole thing.
Yeah, he starts actually very soft spoken.
Yeah.
And as he gets his confidence and gets his wings, he becomes way more like the guy in the group who's like encouraging everyone, and he ends up being like one of the best, like most respected pilots on the team. But he acts alongside Cuba Gooding Jr. again in this.
Yeah.
But in this, they're actually supposed to be a similar sort of age.
Yeah, yeah. That was really cool. There's loads of great actors in it.
Why'd you join the Air Corps, boy?
This country has enemies, sir, and there are people who need protecting from those enemies.
What people, nigga?
All people, sir. To my knowledge, the Germans aren't sparing the coloreds.
To my knowledge, the colored aren't up to fighting the Germans, let alone beating them.
Max Schmeling found out differently, sir.
Yeah, it was really, I love like historical stuff. I've already said this on like plenty of like the previous podcast. So that was a really good one that I'd never seen before. It's quite hard to get hold of maybe because it's like an old TV movie.
Yeah, you can rent it online.
Mm.
Yeah. Same with, so I'll just talk about the other TV movie he did a couple of years later first. So he did Miss Evers Boys.
Yeah.
Which is also set in Tuskegee, also set on, based on real events, and also deals with like racial prejudice.
Yeah.
And this was about the
syphilis
outbreak in America and the cures for that and the tests that were done on black people in Tuskegee.
Mm. Well, basically they'd done in Europe, in like Scandinavia, they'd done a control group or whatever of white people and like syphilis. And this was like many, many years later, they needed a control group of like black subjects.
Yeah, basically they were saying,
even though there was already a cure, but they just kept.
Well, they developed a cure during it, but then never gave the cure to them because they were like, oh no, like black people are different to white people. They can't have the same. Yeah. We need to do tests on them. Whereas like half the scientists are saying, no, like they can have the same medication. What are you talking
about?
And
it was like over 10 years of this. Like,
yeah, they're basically strung along. Miss Evers is the name of the main nurse in charge. And there's a little bit of a romance between her and Lawrence Fishburne's character.
Yeah.
Who actually does take the medication, doesn't go in for the trials and ends up going to war and all this stuff.
Maybe those films are more closely linked than we thought.
Maybe he's playing the same character, isn't it? He comes back with a medal, doesn't he?
Yeah.
So, but yeah, this was like was a really, really shocking film. I was not aware of the Tuskegee experiments and stuff.
No.
It was awful.
But it was really sad because it follows, Miss Evers, and she was like the nurse who was with them like throughout the whole process. And it's basically
She was also black and grew up in that community. So they were almost using her to like lie to everyone and say,
like get everyone on board with the experiment. And then... So she went along with it, that basically initially they couldn't get funding and stuff like that. And then they were like, oh, we'll get funding if we do this for like a year. And then it just like,
we'll get funding for an actual cure.
Yeah.
You just have to tell them that we are curing them by doing these tests.
And it was all like placebo stuff.
So she's in a place where she has to lie to them because it's the only way she thinks that they'll actually get treatment.
Mm.
So she's telling them constantly they're getting treated and they're
actually,
not.
Actually, they're doing
and
nothing.
Every year she's told, oh, one more year. And it ends up being, you know, 10 years more of her lying and none of these people getting actually cured at all.
The treatment, yeah.
So it's an incredibly sad story.
And she actually, like, sacrifices her relationship with Lawrence Fishburne's character to keep the sort of premise going.
She desperately wants to have a life with him.
And she does. She wants to do the right thing. Like that, she wants to, obviously her main priority is to get these guys like the treatment or whatever. Mm. And she's like, if I tell him, it's going to ruin the program and all these years wasted. And like, it's such like a conflicting story.
It's like one of them things where I've gone this far, I have to see it through, but it just keeps going further. Like she says in the film, it's like climbing a hill. They say, oh, it's just over that hill. And she climbs up the hill.
And then there's another hill.
And then they
hill.
Say, oh, no, that's not the top of the hill. You can see the new peak and constantly going. And yeah.
So it was really. It was extremely frustrating to watch.
Yeah.
Like, it was an amazing story. Well, it's not even a story because it's real, which is like the more...
That's what I found like, so shocking. I couldn't believe this was a real thing that happened. Yeah. But,
it's definitely worth a watch.
Two really interesting biographical, race-related TV movies at the same time. And in between, he did the film adaptation of Othello.
Yeah, Shakespeare.
And he was actually the first time a black actor was cast in a film version of Othello.
Right.
And Othello is supposed to be like a man of colour.
Mm-hmm.
In
He's called the Moor, isn't he? Which is like Mediterranean.
And I think in the film it seemed to allude to the idea that he was like North African.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it didn't dwell too much on his race, but it did come into the story a lot. I wasn't familiar with the story of Othello.
Yeah.
No, it's not a Shakespeare play that I had any knowledge of before, other than I knew it was a romance.
Yeah. Like
play.
A tragedy.
I knew it involved race slightly. And that's about all I knew.
Yeah, yeah.
And this one was one that was actually recommended to us.
Hmm, cool.
So thanks to Henry. Listener Henry, who recommended this. I think he must listen to Weird Tales, where I talked about studying Shakespeare.
Oh, right.
And I think the recommendation was based on this. Like, it's a really good adaptation of Othello, a really good cast.
Mm.
And I actually really enjoyed this. I really did like this.
Yeah. It takes a while. Like we were saying, we only watched this one like last night, but takes a while to sort of attune your ears to the language use.
Mm-hmm.
So like for the first probably 15, 20 minutes, I was a bit like, it was quite difficult for me to kind of in my mind, like translate what was going on. But then actually relatively soon after that, you sort of just like slip into the like language use.
I think the stories, a lot of time the Shakespeare stories are quite... They make them very easy to follow. Like, he's a good writer.
Yeah.
I don't know if you heard this, Shakespeare was a good writer. But I think he was writing for the masses. So the stories work in a simple level. Like, just watching, you can work out what's happening.
Yeah.
And then...
There's like layers.
If you can understand the language, you will enjoy it even more.
Mm.
And then the more educated people would understand the metaphor and the wordplay that's going in. So it's levels to it.
Yeah.
So I think anyone can enjoy it.
Mm.
But some would enjoy it
more.
On
different levels. Yeah.
For me, it wasn't so bad because I'd been studying. I study English language and I'm currently in the middle of a degree. And I spent the last year doing some study of Shakespearean language. Mm. So for me, it didn't take
so
too
jarring.
Bad to get into it. Although this was the first time I'd watched a Shakespeare play after studying him.
Right, okay.
So it was actually really kind of pleasurable for me to like, oh, like I could feel... My studies
using,
kicking into my brain, like, oh, I get this. And I quite enjoyed it. And it was refreshing to watch a Shakespeare play that I had no knowledge of.
Hmm.
And he was really good in it.
Yeah.
He was really good. He's
I think
he's Othello.
As well.
He's the title character.
Yeah.
And he's really good at this. Like, I wonder if he was like a student of Shakespeare. Because we said, watching some of the Lawrence Fishburne films, he's so well spoken.
Yeah, like learned.
It made us think that maybe he was a language student. Maybe he did study Shakespeare and that. I don't think so.
Oh, really?
He said when he...
Yeah, but all actors sort of like, I think it depends how you get into acting, but a lot of them do study Shakespeare, don't
he
they?
He said this was the first time he'd read any Shakespeare since he had to study Hamlet in school.
Wow.
Like, he had not studied Shakespeare since, he was in school and had to study Hamlet a bit like every student does.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
Oh, cool.
So he was approached to play the lead role and took it, and then,
it's get a his really head
around
film.
The Shakespearean language, and he really nailed it. Like, this was a really good portrayal of that character. Mm.
I think it must be quite hard as an actor to kind of get the, like, pathos, kind of like the...
to be natural
and
deliver the lines in a way that's natural and engaging and not awkward and stilted.
Yeah.
And he did a really good job at that.
Mm.
It is the cause. It is the cause, my soul. Let me not name it to you, you chaste stars. It is the cause. Yet I'll not shed her blood nor scar that whiter skin of hers than snow and smooth as monumental alabaster. Yet she must die. Else she'll betray more men.
He was the highlight of the film for me. I know he's the lead character, but he was, like, really good in it.
And what's his name? Branagh?
Kenneth Branagh was sort of the villain of the piece.
He was really good. But he also was, like, breaking the fourth wall.
Yeah, he's, like, scheming. More of a cartoony character.
Yeah.
Whereas Othello is playing, like, someone being manipulated and controlled, and he's going through all sorts of conflict. And, he had a lot of emotions to do.
Mm.
And he was... I really, really enjoyed it.
Yeah, Lawrence Fishburne's performance was just awesome in that.
Yeah.
So definitely. Thanks for the recommendation.
Thanks for the recommendation, because I probably wouldn't have watched this one without that recommendation. Mm. But yeah, this was great.
So what do you want to talk about next? There's a few after Miss Evers Boys.
Well, actually, the one he did on the same year of Miss Evers Boys.
Right.
Event Horizon.
Right.
You haven't seen this film, right?
No.
I really like this film.
Okay.
So I'll just quickly talk about it. I won't go too in-depth as you haven't seen this one, but this is a sci-fi horror film.
Yeah.
And it's absolutely nuts.
Really?
It's absolutely bonkers. And I love how crazy it is.
It feels like the prelude to kind of like The Matrix, like setting him up for...
It's crazy. It's hard to explain. He plays the captain of this spaceship, basically.
Yeah.
And... I won't go too into it. I really want people to watch this. So I won't give too much away, but it is crazy. It involves basically a portal to hell.
Right, okay.
And Sam Neill is playing a crazy evil villain who's been through this portal to hell.
Oh my God.
And it's gone crazy. And there's all sorts of shocking depravity on show, like when they find the logs of the missing crew and stuff.
Okay.
It's a crazy, horrific film.
Did you say it's like a horror?
Definitely.
Oh, right. Okay.
It's shocking.
Okay.
I was taken aback watching this.
Really?
Yeah.
Was it quite big? When did it come out? 1997?
I think it's got quite a big cult following.
Right.
I think, I spoke to my friend Rick, who some people may have heard on some other podcasts I do. But he said, he liked Jurassic Park, so he watched Event Horizon because he liked Sam Neill in that.
Oh,
and then
God.
Was like, oh, my God. Because it's a shocker. I really think people should watch. If you haven't watched Event Horizon and you've got a strong stomach, give it a go. It's a crazy sci-fi film. And even if you don't like it all that much, it's not like anything else I've seen.
Right.
You ever seen fire in zero gravity? It's beautiful. It's like liquid. Slides all over everything. Comes up in waves. And they just kept hitting him. Wave after wave. He was screaming for me to save him.
It's crazy. Anyway, so what have we got after Event Horizon?
So we didn't watch these. Hoodlum, Always Outnumbered. That was a TV movie, and Welcome to Hollywood. Yeah. So next one.
Next big one is The Matrix.
Matrix, which we spoke about. 1999, which we spoke about earlier.
Yeah. Followed by Reloaded.
Yeah.
And Revolutions. They filmed the sequels together. And yeah. Mystic River came out actually
just at the, pretty much the same time as Revolutions.
So what, he must have filmed it after he did the filming The Matrix.
While they were
and
in
it
like,
was released between the two
yeah.
sequels while they were editing the third one.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we talked about all them. Mm-hmm. And then after that, 2005 is Assault on Precinct 13.
Yep.
Which is a remake, the remake of Assault on Precinct yeah. 13.
So he plays basically like a mob boss.
Mm.
He's like he's like a really suave, like yeah. intelligent guy. He's like, I've never been like arrested kind of thing. He's always like dodged like the law. And basically he's
very unfazed by anything.
Yeah. He winds up getting arrested, and then they, due to like adverse weather, like some like snow on it during his transport, they basically have to stop at this precinct 13, which is almost closed. Like everyone's gone.
It's not supposed to have prisoners incarcerated
yeah,
there.
Yeah, yeah. And it's like New Year's Eve, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's only like three people there, sort of like the dregs, and they get this massive like mob boss turn up on their doorstep, and then chaos ensues, and it's like,
I mean, it's a real trash action film.
Yeah,
I actually really liked Fishburne's character in it.
Yeah, I did as well.
I thought he was definitely the best part of the film.
Yeah.
I assume you know who I am, Sergeant. You're a gangster. That's accurate. He's a cop killer. One of my partners in crime is your fellow officer, Marcus Duval. If I make it to court, his whole team goes to jail. They can't allow me to leave this precinct alive.
They can't allow any of us to leave here alive.
When this is over, you're going back to jail.
This ain't about me and you. Not yet.
We gotta put them all down.
So Ethan Hawke's like the main like police guy.
Yeah, I didn't find him convincing in this role.
I really don't.
Didn't suit him.
No, he's not very. He's not like a compassionate character.
He just didn't seem like the sort of guy who'd be like running the show, yeah. like running the precinct. When they were calling him captain, I was like, him?
Yeah, he's only there basically because he was injured.
Yeah,
and like he lost some like teammates in the field, so he's basically resigned himself to being a desk jockey. And
but it's one of the ones where it's one of those films where the cops have to team up with the villains to fight off the bigger threat.
Yeah.
So, you know, before long they're unlocking the cells and they're all giving them guns.
And there's all
and
like
stuff.
Mistrust and yeah. kind of stuff like this.
It's a real trashy action film. It wasn't terrible, but yeah. it's like it wasn't exactly a masterpiece. Amazing. It was like we put it on in the afternoon and watched a trashy action film.
But Lawrence Fishburne's character was the best thing about it.
Yeah, he was very fun to watch in this.
Yeah.
Like how like just yeah, suave and unfazed he
kind
was.
Kind of mysterious a little
and
bit.
Didn't take long for him to be like calling the shots.
Yeah.
Everyone's looking to him to lead.
Well, he's sort of like leading like the criminals, and then Ethan Hawke's supposed to be leading like the, basically it's an older police guy and his secretary and his like shrink.
That secretary character. Please.
It's such like a misfit band of people.
They just got this like.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a real product of its time, I think, of like yeah. the sexual politics of it aren't amazing.
It's a bit
of
fun.
There's like a secretary walking around in fishnets who basically wants to shag everyone.
It's really
that
bizarre.
Character I could have done without.
Anyway.
But yeah, so it's not going to be on anyone's list of their top four, I don't think.
It's a trashy action film, though.
Little bonus fun one, the film Kiss Kiss Bang Bang.
Oh, yeah.
He plays he has an uncredited cameo in it, a bit like Cate Blanchett does in Hot Fuzz.
Okay.
He's the voiceover on an advert that's on the telly in one of the scenes in the background of Kiss Kiss Bang Bang.
Fair enough. The next one that we watched, Aquila and the Bee, which came out in 2006, which I really liked.
This was actually the first one we watched of our, like, ones we hadn't seen before list.
And again, like, he plays like a mentor.
This character. Was like Spelling Bee version of Searching for Bobby Fischer.
Yeah, it was kind of, yeah, it really was. Like, there's a young kid who like needs kind of like guidance and like mentoring.
It was weird because they were the first two we watched. We watched one night and one the other, and I was like, this is the same film.
But he's much more involved in this one.
He was the producer on this.
Oh, wow.
Of this film, or one of the producers. And he's like a major character in this, yeah.
Yeah.
He's probably the main, aside from the girl, the main character, the main adult character.
Yeah, yeah.
Let me ask you something. Where do you think big words come from?
People with big brains.
Right. What do you see?
A bunch of big words I don't know.
Ah, look again. What kind of power do we get from the sun?
Solar.
So, what does soul mean?
Sun.
What does terraneous sound like?
Terrain.
Meaning the earth. Solid terraneous means the sun and the earth working together. So where do big words come from?
Little words.
And how many little words do you know?
Tons.
Yes! And there are tons more for you to learn. There are Greek ones. There are Latin ones. French ones. And if you learn them all, you can spell any word, no matter how big.
So I really like this film. It's pretty good. It's like just fun.
It's a little bit like cheesy. Yeah. It's like a kid's film. But
it's like a
feel
good film.
This was the third collaboration with Angela Bassett.
Yeah.
Who played Akilah's mum in this.
Isn't it weird how they sort of like just kind of weave into each other's
might have, if he's one of the producers on this, I imagine that he probably got her on board. Yeah.
Yeah.
But this was like a nice feel good, heartwarming.
Yeah. Yeah.
Film. I mean, yeah, I've got nothing negative or glowingly positive to say about it. Like, this is right down the middle for me. Like, it's very watchable.
It's easy watch.
Very heartwarming. Yeah. Quite, like, actually emotional. Like, his character had, like, a tragic history. And when it got into that, I actually found, like, that... Because this was the first one we watched, actually. Yeah. This was the first inkling I got of, like, oh, he's actually a really good actor.
Yeah.
More than, like, just being a cool guy who's in The Matrix. Yeah, yeah. Like, the pathos his character had in this really worked on me, like very touching. And I love the training montage. There's like a training montage, like you're getting Rocky spelling stuff, and he's like, my favorite bit of the film is him looping around her banging a dustbin lid
while she's like skipping. Love it.
Mission Impossible 3.
I don't remember
I didn't even remember him being in this. I'm not like huge on the Mission Impossible films.
I think he was a bit part.
I looked it up, and he is he's the like director of whatever organization at the moment. Yeah. You know, that classic character that he gets cast in a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Because I watched a few clips today, and I was like, oh, yeah, he was in that. But, yeah, nothing to stand out.
Oh, my God, he was the narrator of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Yeah, but before that, he was also in...
Bobby.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, Bobby. Yeah, so, yeah, 2006, Bobby, about assassination of Robert Kennedy. Kennedy, who shot at this, like, hotel.
This was a weird film.
Yeah.
When I started watching this, I was like, oh, I'm not getting this. I didn't like it for, like, the first three quarters of the film. I didn't get the gimmick of it. I didn't know much about it.
Yeah.
I thought I was in for a biography of the assassination of Bobby Kennedy.
Mm-hmm.
But really, it's about all the people...
Surrounding him when it happened.
Yeah, like, it was about everyone else in the hotel that where it happened.
Yeah, it's sort of like lots of little mini stories.
Again, another...
In the same time period.
Another ensemble piece.
Yeah.
For him.
And he's really not a big part at all.
Tiny part.
Yeah. He's basically just like the head chef in the hotel.
Exactly. And he's in maybe three scenes.
Yeah.
But then, like, no one's really got a big part in this.
No.
Anthony Hopkins is in this. How many scenes is he in? Like, three?
Yeah.
As well, playing chess for three scenes. Like, it cuts between so many different... This cast is huge.
Yeah.
And it cuts between... Like, no one's really got a big part. Like, Shia LaBeouf's in it.
Yeah.
Elijah Wood.
Yeah.
Like I said, Anthony Hopkins, like so many people.
Yeah. Lindsay Lohan, briefly.
Yeah, Sheen's in it. What's her name?
Heather Graham.
Yeah. And
Ashton Kutcher's in it.
Yeah, there's loads of people in it. Mary Elizabeth Winstead, Sharon Stone. Sharon Stone?
Demi Moore, yeah.
Yeah, there's so many people in this. Anyway,
it's a big cast.
Huge, huge cast with loads of people playing loads of small roles. And all leading up to the tragic event.
Yeah.
But then you see how they're all wrapped up in this event. And actually, the last section of the film, I was like, wow, this is actually really good.
Yeah, yeah.
But I just didn't know where it was going.
It takes a long time to, like, get going.
I feel like it's one of them films, if I watched it again, I would appreciate it because I would know where it's going.
Yeah.
And if I guess I felt more knowledgeable about American history and stuff,
yeah,
I would get the things it's nodding
it's
towards
like
more.
You see loads of little bits of the puzzle and then at the end they just all fall into place and you're like, oh yeah, shit, there's the full picture.
Yeah, it's just not the film I was expecting when I watched it.
Mm.
And again, I actually really loved Lawrence Fishburne in this,
yeah,
but he was only in three scenes.
It was a tiny, tiny part for him, yeah.
Now, have you ever seen Fantastic Four, Rise of the Silver Surfer? It's the second of the original Fantastic Four films.
I think I have.
Really?
I don't know.
No, this is not a good film. I saw this at the cinema with one of my friends on a whim. We just wanted to go to the cinema and was like, oh, we're just going to see the new Fantastic Four film.
Yeah.
And we both came out thinking, well, that was really bad.
Mm.
And it was notoriously bad. But I love Lawrence Fishburne's voice in this film.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Is he a voice in it?
He voices Silver Surfer.
Right, okay.
So Doug Jones, who's the guy who plays all prosthetic characters and everything, plays yeah. Pan and in Pan's Labyrinth and...
cool. Yeah, yeah.
And Abe Sapien in the Hellboy films. Like, he plays the Silver Surfer, right. But Lawrence Fishburne voices him.
Right.
At the time, I didn't know it was Lawrence Fishburne.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking, that film was terrible, but I love Silver Surfer's voice. And I even said that to Jibs. And looking up today, I was like, oh shit, it was Lawrence Fishburne doing the voice.
No wonder you liked it.
So it was the only bit I liked in a bad film.
I don't think I've seen that one, actually. I think I've only seen the first one.
Yeah. Neither of them are good.
No.
But yeah, I actually... So again, Lawrence Fishburne was the best part of this film.
Yeah.
Because he has such... that he plays it very, like, calm.
Right.
And balanced.
Yeah.
And soothing, because obviously Silver Surfer's like an alien.
Mm.
But he's like Dr. Manhattan, where everything's yeah. very, like, placid. And it's just Lawrence Fishburne talking very plain and
I feel a bit like the same as, like, Superman as well. Kind of very, like, not that much emotional range.
It is known by many names. My people called it Galactus, the devourer of worlds. It must feed on energy to survive, both thermal and organic.
How could you willingly serve this thing?
Because I must.
Doesn't it bother you? All the worlds and innocent people you've helped destroy?
My service spares my world and the one I love.
Yeah, it's really soothing. The way he plays Silver Surfer, I find the voice so soothing.
Mm.
I want him to do ASMR Silver Surfer.
My God. The most obscure ASMR.
That is pretty obscure. So after that, he got into TV.
He did a big
for a
stint
long time.
CSI.
Big stint on CSI. And I'm not a CSI guy. I've never watched CSI. But he was in it for like 3 years,
yeah.
playing a very major role. In between, he did the film Predators, which right. I've seen.
Yeah, I've not seen that.
This is, I'll just very briefly talk about it. This is...
in the alien sort of like...
Yeah, it's in the alien predator
mythology.
It's a really cool concept. I actually think this film's really underrated. It's...
Mm.
It's loads of people on a planet, which is basically a big game reserve for predators.
Right.
And they're all being hunted.
Right, okay.
So it kind of throws the concept of one predator and a bunch of humans from
the
original
other way.
Film to have like loads of predators, and they're just going to chuck a load of humans on there as well and go nuts on them.
Mm-hmm.
And Lawrence Fishburne was quite highly billed on this.
Right.
He filmed for 2 days.
Yeah.
And is... in the film for like a few minutes.
Really?
Like,
wow.
He is barely in this film. He's like someone they come across at about the hour mark of
Whoa.
The film who's like survived on the planet for a long time.
My God.
It's like a little bit part he did in the middle of making CSI, I guess.
Huh.
So, yeah.
It's crazy that they build him so high though. By this point, he's like very like
but I
respected.
Guess, yeah,
like,
yeah.
Reputable like, actor, yeah. yeah.
So then it was Contagion, which we talked about.
Yeah.
And then he did Man of Steel.
Yeah.
Which is the Superman film.
2013, yeah.
Part of the DCEU universe of films.
God, I haven't seen this for ages.
I actually don't mind Man of Steel.
Yeah.
I think a lot of the DC films are pretty bad.
Yeah.
And I know this one is very, like, people are hot and cold on this.
Yeah, that's all right.
I think it's all right. Good. This is the first time that Perry White, he plays Perry White, leader of the Daily Planet, or whatever. And this is the first time Perry White was portrayed by, as a black man.
Yeah.
And he's fine. Like, Perry White is not a very interesting role.
Mm. But then again, he's like sort of a role of kind of, he's got, he's like respected. He's certain got like status. Gravitas. Yeah, he's got like status. So like, again, like another, he's sort of like a bit typecast in that.
Yeah. And he continues playing this character in Batman v Superman as well, which is not a good film.
Right.
I really didn't like that film.
Yeah.
So yeah, this is like a, I think would have been a more recurring role had those films been more successful.
Right, yeah.
But I can't see him appearing in those films anymore.
Is that
where
you think he's sort of switched to like Marvel?
Yeah. Well,
he's one of the only people who's done both.
Yeah, I guess we'll talk about that when we come to Ant-Man and the Wasp. But then he went back and did some more TV work. He did Hannibal.
Mm-hmm.
I love that TV show. He plays Jack Crawford in that.
Mm.
But we haven't really talked about TV on this podcast. So we'll skip forward to Passengers, which you watched and I didn't. What can you remember about the film Passengers? Because I remember you not being overly enamored by it.
Oh, yeah. It was fine. It was, this ending was like quite meh, if I remember it rightly.
I remember this film coming out.
It was just like a really gratuitous, like, here's two of the most famous people on the planet right now. Let's put them in a movie. Yeah. And like, yeah, it was a bit weird.
It was one of them films where the hype for it was massive when all the trailers came out.
And I really don't remember Lawrence Fishburne being in it, really, because
all I know is he plays the captain of the ship they're on, again.
Yeah, but the thing is, like, they're all in, like, stasis, so
yeah.
I don't think he's in it. I can't remember. I've not watched it for a long time, but basically it's like Chris Pratt's character is, like, transporting a million people to a colony.
Hmm.
He wakes up. He gets really lonely and he sees Jennifer Lawrence's character and, like, decides to wake her up as well. And then they're like, fuck, we've got to live on here for another, like, I don't know how long it is, 100 years or something. We're definitely going to die. It's, like, really weird. I can't remember how long it is. Yeah. They were awakened 90 years early.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So, yeah. It's basically him, like, Chris Pratt's character has been, like, well selfish, been like, I need somebody to talk to.
I remember when it came out and, like, everyone was hyped from the trailer, and then when it came out, everyone was like, it's really bad.
Yeah, it's just, like, a bit meh, like, nothing-y. So, not one, a big one for Lawrence Fishburne at all there.
But then the next film.
Right, John Wick, Chapter 2.
Oof.
Amazing.
I do like these John Wick films.
It's basically like Morpheus Part 2.
Where you get a reuniting of Keanu and Fishburne.
Yeah.
And he plays a really fun, crazy character in these, the Bowery King.
Yeah.
He sends messages through carrier pigeon and he's like the leader of the underworld.
Yeah.
It's great. It's such a fun character.
Yeah, really cool.
And everything is over the top in the John Wick films. And this character is very over the top and larger than life. And he reprises the role in the third one as well.
Yeah.
And there are a few sort of like allusions to The Matrix.
Yeah.
A little nods to The Matrix in this film because it is Keanu and Fishburne again. But in the second one, this is what's crazy about this role in this film. For me, Lawrence Fishburne is such a big part of that franchise.
Right.
That I forget he wasn't even in the first one.
Yeah.
And in the second one, he has 10 minutes of screen time.
Oh my God.
Less than 10 minutes. But I always think of him as a massive part of those films.
I think... Do you think it's just because it's like he's got such a presence?
Yeah, definitely. He doesn't show up till like an hour into that second film.
Yeah.
So for the, say, half of that franchise, he's not even in it.
Yeah.
Shows up half through the second film and is instantly such a big presence that he is just part of that franchise to me.
Yeah, no wonder they brought him back.
Yeah, and he's so, such a great cartoony character in a film that's full of great cartoony characters.
He's so, like, booming, like, his voice and, like, his personality and stuff is,
And when they get him on the ropes in the third one, they just couldn't give two fucks, basically. Yeah, he's great, great character.
You made your point. You have earned my fealty. Matter of fact, I'm going to shove so much fealty up your ass, it's going to come spilling out of your mouth.
You had your chance.
Well, since you see it that way, I guess it's time I told you to climb down off your high table and go fuck yourself.
Duly noted. You gave John Wick 7 bullets. Your penance will be paid with 7 cuts.
Well, sometimes you gotta cut a motherfucker. Avert your eyes, my sweet. The king is dead. Long live the king.
Ant-Man and the Wasp. So we touched on that briefly. Yeah. So he's basically jumped ship to Marvel from DC.
Yeah, one of the only actors who's been
able to do
in
so.
The MCU
yeah.
and the DCEU.
Yeah.
There's only a few. Like, he's maybe the most character in a prominent role that's done it.
So he plays Hank Pym's, like, old kind of, like, peer, basically.
Yeah, they got a bit
like
of,
a little bit of a rival.
There's a rivalry
but...
between them now, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, he was the guy who used to... Because Ant-Man can grow.
Yeah.
From Civil War onwards.
Yeah.
He was the guy who used to do that. And in the comics, he's known as Goliath. But yeah, I actually think Ant-Man and the Wasp is a really, really fun, overlooked Marvel film.
Yeah.
Because I think it came out in between Infinity War and Endgame. And it's much smaller in scale.
Yeah.
Literally smaller. It goes in the microverse.
Ba-dum-bum.
Thank you. But it's a really fun film.
Yeah.
With a really fun cast.
Yeah.
And he's a really great part of it.
Yeah.
Going that big, it must have been exhausting.
I slept for 3 days straight. You have no idea.
Actually, I do. Back in the day, I was Hank's partner on a project called Goliath.
Excuse me, you were my partner?
The only thing more tiring than going that big is putting up with Hank's bullshit.
Right. How big did you get?
My record, 21 feet.
Not bad.
You?
I don't...
No, really, I'm curious.
65 feet.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Huge.
65.
If you two are finished comparing sizes, we need to figure out a way to track down the lab.
He's not a massive part, though. Like, he does... He plays,
he's
like,
an
quite an important character,
part,
but
yeah.
it's not a big role. Yeah.
Yeah. And, like, and in the Marvel films, they use a lot of the de-aging VFX tech.
Mm.
But for him, interestingly, for his flashback scenes, they just got his son...
Oh, cool.
To go in and play him and then just slightly touched him up because they look quite similar.
Yeah.
So Langston Fishburne, Lawrence's son, came in and played the younger version of his dad in the flashbacks, which is pretty cool. Like I said, there's not many major characters who have been in both the MCU and the DCEU. There's a few smaller ones. You can look up lists online. The only one that would come close to like a major role, I guess, is the guy who played Shazam.
Yeah.
Zachary Levi.
Mm-hmm.
He was one of the Warriors Three in the Thor films.
Right, okay.
Only in the second and third because he was recast.
So,
Ant-Man and the Wasp, really, like, I really like his character in it as well.
Mm.
I said before, I do like the Marvel films. They're good, fun action films.
Mm-hmm. We watched The Mule, but he's not hardly in that, really.
Yeah, I think we're getting near to the end because The Mule's only last year.
Mm.
So The Mule, he has small role.
Love that film.
Did you?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's really good. I love Clint Eastwood, though.
All right, okay. Film was all right.
It's a Clint Eastwood, like, last hurrah. It was just so fun, like, the risk of it and stuff.
Yeah, like, so it's about...
An old guy just trucking around, like, kind of at first accidentally transporting, like, cocaine, and then he realises, and then he just was like, fuck it, and carries on.
Yeah, exactly. Second collaboration with Clint Eastwood for Lawrence Fishburne, after Mystic River. And so there's two guys who are on the trail.
Yeah.
And their boss is played by Lawrence Fishburne.
Yeah, so it's a very small
role. So it is a pretty small role. It just cuts back to him in the office basically going like, oh, haven't you got this guy yet?
Yeah, we need some arrests.
Yeah, pretty much. There's like maybe 3 or 4 scenes where he's just shouting at Bradley Cooper and Michael Peña.
Yeah.
Second film alongside Michael Peña because he was in Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Yeah.
But yeah, really small role. Not much to say about it.
No.
And then
good film, but not one for Lawrence.
And then finally, the most recent film. Actually, the most recent film he's done.
Well, he was in Where Do You Go, Bernadette?
Sorry. Yeah, I missed that one. Yeah. Okay, so Where Do You Go, Bernadette? We actually spoke about this on the Cate Blanchett film podcast.
Yeah.
We hadn't watched it.
Okay.
At the time we did that, we said, "Oh,
we've
wanted to watch this," but we couldn't see it.
I really liked it.
And we've seen it now. Yeah. So first of all, would it have made a difference to your Cate Blanchett?
Maybe.
Episode?
I think I would have put it up there as like maybe one to watch, like my kind of favourite. Not my favourite, but
I know
like,
that
really
you did
it.
Really enjoy this film.
Yeah, I liked it a lot. I probably would have been highly recommended.
Yeah. But he, again, this is a tiny role. I feel like he's just doing lots of really small parts at the moment, because this was a tiny role.
Yeah.
He shows up in like a documentary talking head about Kate Blanchett's character in a documentary they're watching on YouTube in the film. And then they meet for coffee in one scene.
Yeah.
And he says to her, oh, you have to keep creating. You're a creator. And tries to get her like spark going again.
He's like an old colleague.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who thinks she's brilliant and that she's like sort of let it go a little bit. And she's into it.
Yeah. She sort of goes to him as like a soundboard and they have a coffee, don't they?
And that's it. That's like his scene. Mm. That's why I forgot. Yeah, I forgot about it.
So the newest one, Running with the Devil, which you watched and I skipped out on.
Yeah, I watched this the other night when you're out. I said, I'll watch the newest one for us. I thought this was pretty dire.
Right.
I really didn't enjoy it. This was really boring to me. I very rarely am distracted when I'm watching a film.
Yeah.
But for this, I was like on my phone a bit, which is really unlike me. I'm not someone who sits on their phone, but even I was just like, I was scrolling through Twitter and stuff when I was watching this. It was dull.
Really? Has he got a big part?
Oh, yeah. He's like him and Nicolas Cage are like the co-leads.
Right.
So, that's why I was like, wow, it's like a drug running film with Nick Cage and Lawrence Fishburne. This is going to be trashy and great.
Yeah.
But it wasn't. It was trashy.
It was just dry.
It was really boring. It was more about like the logistics of transporting cocaine. But then it would cut to these kind of, he plays a really crazy character. It's like the film.
We know about the logistics because we watched The Mule.
The film opens with naked Lawrence Fishburne laying on the floor.
Right.
You have to watch Lawrence Fishburne also going to like a peep show and masturbating through the glass.
Oh, weird.
I didn't like seeing him in this role.
Yeah.
Hiring two hookers and having like an orgy party whilst they're like snorting coke. I didn't like him in this role.
Yeah. But even though, like we've said this before about other actors and actresses, just like we don't like seeing him in shitty roles because we actually really like the actors and actresses. But seeing him play like Ike Turner, who is a complete scumbag, but it was such an amazing performance. Yeah. Like it's just, he's like enthralling to watch.
Exactly.
Like you're just like mesmerized like by the whole thing. But it sounds like this was just just totally missed the mark.
I just didn't like, he just didn't see this role. And like I said, I don't mind him as a villain. He's great as Ike Turner. Even Assault on Precinct 13, which is a trashy movie, I like him as the villain in that film.
He's got presence.
Yeah. He makes a really good villain. He actually said in an interview, like, before he did Matrix, he was like, I was always typecast as like villains. I guess I look like an imposing guy. Mm. Before he started being more typecast as like mentor figures after he did Morpheus. I like him as like a villain, but this was like him being a scummy villain and I didn't like it at all.
Yeah. What about Nick Cage? Just naff.
Nick Cage is really an enigma. He is. No one had actual names in this film. So. Right. Everyone was like the something. So Nick Cage was the chef and Lawrence Fishburne was the man.
Oh my God. Who wrote this?
It was a weird film. It completely bypassed me. I just saw it pop up online when I was like searching for films. When I was on IMDb scrolling through and I was like, Running with the Devil 2019, what's this?
Right.
Looked it up and watched it when he was out the other night.
Hmm. He's got some stuff coming up, so... Look, a few things in like post and pre-production. Brothers Keeper. There's a TV movie in there and something called Crimson Blues, which I'm sure will be out in the next, I don't know, however
we didn't
long.
I did want to watch Last Flag Flying. We didn't get around to it. Just ran out of time. It just looked like an interesting cast. Has an all right reviews. Linkletter directing it. It's him alongside Bryan Cranston and Steve Carell playing like Vietnam War vets. I was like, that's a weird, interesting combination of people. So maybe I'll watch that at some point.
Yeah.
And the other one I really wanted to watch was Thurgood, but I just couldn't find it to watch. Maybe I didn't know where to look, but this was like a stage show that he did, a one-man show.
Oh.
And it was like praised.
Mm.
And then they recorded a version of it and released it and it was put on telly. But I couldn't find this anywhere to watch.
Bummer.
But I'd heard that he was amazing in this, and it is just him on stage giving a speech. It's like a one-man show, but like apparently it's gripping.
I guess if we find it and watch it, then we'll do a little addendum.
Yeah.
Cool.
So anyway, that's the filmography. We'll have another little break, and then we'll come back and talk about our favourites.
So now we're going to talk about what our favourite top four are.
Yeah.
Do you want to take it in turns, or are you just going to like list them out?
No, I think we just list them out. Yeah. Yeah. Did you find this easy or hard to pick yours?
Fairly easy.
Yeah, yeah. I kind of thought normally as we're going through the episode, I sort of make notes when I'm remembering things. For me, I sort of looked through this earlier and was like, this is easy.
Yeah.
It came down to like six for me.
Yeah.
But I think there's a clear four.
I've got six actually on mine that I've sort of like marked. So you go first. So what's your personal favourite?
Yeah, these aren't in any order.
Yeah.
But definitely The Matrix.
Yeah.
Up there for me.
I've got The Matrix on mine as well, but I'm sort of like just kind of rolling them all into one.
Also, like, The Matrix 1 is a masterpiece.
Yeah.
The others, I do enjoy them, but I wouldn't say they're my favourite. I like these other films more than The Matrix 2 and 3.
Right.
So this is The Matrix 1 for me. This is a small role.
Right.
But it's got to be in there. John Wick.
Okay.
But, you know, just as a thing, as a whole thing, let's say John Wick 2, because it's the one his character was introduced in.
Right.
Less than 10 minutes screen time. I don't care.
Yeah.
Barry King's so good.
Okay.
So John Wick, chapter 2.
Yeah. I love that film, but it's not in my list.
Event Horizon.
Right. Okay.
Like I said, I love that film. It's crazy.
You're trying to get it in there any way you can.
And Othello.
Okay.
I thought he was fantastic in it, and it made me really engage with a Shakespeare play.
Yeah, that's cool.
So they're my four. Matrix, John Wick Chapter 2, Othello, Event Horizon.
Your personal fave. So mine is Matrix.
Mm-hmm.
Tuskegee Airmen.
Uh-huh.
Love a bit of like historical biographies.
That was a short list for me as well.
Yeah. Aquila and the Bee.
Ah, okay.
Really good film. He's got a massive role in that, and it's just like a heartwarming film, so I love that.
Mm-hmm.
And What's Love Got to Do with It?
Uh-huh.
Really like that film, even though he was a total douche.
You said there was a couple that were close for you. What were they?
John Wick, like really close. And I really liked him in Assault and Precinct 13 as well.
Oh, really?
Yeah. The film was fine, but I thought he was great.
My other close one was Boys in the Hood.
Right, yeah.
I really liked his character, Furious Stars. I really liked his character in that film.
So
Tuskegee and Boys in the Hood were my like runner-ups. Yeah.
So what's your known for then? What do you think we should replace IMDb with?
Right. So we definitely keep Matrix.
Yeah.
But get rid of the sequels.
Yeah.
Get them out of there.
I think just stick number one in there.
What's Love Got to Do with It? I think we can both agree.
Yeah, that's on my list.
Because Oscar nomination, fantastic performance.
Yeah.
Get that in there.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
I would say, even though it wasn't on either of our lists,
right?
Boys in the Hood.
Yeah, that's actually
his
in my
breakthrough
top
role.
Yeah, really pivotal.
I like that we're both on the same page for this. Okay, this is my fourth choice is sort of between three, so I'd like to know what you are thinking.
So my last one is Othello.
Okay, so mine was between Mystic River, just because it's a big film,
right?
Othello,
yeah,
because of the pedigree of it,
yeah,
and John Wick because of that franchise and the status of it, but it is a small role. But if you're saying Othello,
I think
we'll just go with that,
because he's one of the main characters. He always plays like alongside somebody. He's always like a co like lead on stuff, like in everything, and he was definitely a co-lead on this, and it was his performance is like incredible.
Yeah, he's the title performer, and I think even if you struggle with Shakespearean like dialogue, you can understand what's happening just from the visuals, because it's so well made and so well performed that just the actions of the characters
and
portray the story.
Yeah, his acting's really just like so believable, even though they're basically talking gobbledygook.
Okay, so one of us is a language student. wow, that was the quickest we've ever agreed on the known for. Boom, done.
So, sorry, Contagion, and the other two Matrixes.
We've only kept one.
I feel like IMDb, though, like it's a bit selfish of them to just put three. Sometimes it's actually changed since I looked at it.
And like, no way, Contagion, for like what he should be known for. I mean, that film's fine and he's fine in it, but like he's so good in other things.
It's an ensemble,
Like he's so good in other things.
And Mystic River, it's a massive film, but he is just a really, he's a supporting role.
And he's good in it, but the character hasn't got that much to do.
No.
He's sort of like the bad cop. They play good cop, bad cop a little bit.
But then...
it's him and, who's he? Kevin Bacon, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's him and Kevin Bacon.
But even his presence there's no pivotal thing that he finds out, that character.
Well, he's the one who wants to pursue, I can't like it, spoilers, but he's the one who wants to follow the major line of questioning that the main film is like pivoting on.
Right.
He is a, like I say, he's the fourth main character in a very good film, but those other films, like Morpheus, such a memorable character.
Yeah.
Boys in the Hood, like his breakthrough performance that got him noticed and is so good in it. Othello, we've already been heaping praise on that. And What's Love Got to Do with It? He plays a monster, but he's so, like, you're transfixed on him when he's on screen.
Yeah.
When he's being so, like I said, that opening shot where he's on stage and he's, like, commanding the room. He's charismatic. So cool. Yeah, so charismatic.
He goes from charismatic to, like, completely villainous.
Yeah. And then you can't take your eyes off him because you're scared of him, basically, later in the film.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think that's pretty good.
Perfect.
Let us know what your... yeah, what your known force would be, if you've got any up there that we hadn't watched that we maybe should have put on our list.
So we'll just quickly run through ours again. The known four we agreed on was Boys in the Hood, The Matrix, What's Love Got to Do with It, and Othello. Becca, your top four again?
Matrix, Tuskegee Airmen, Aquila and the Bee, and What's Love Got to Do with It.
And mine were Matrix, John Wick Chapter 2, Othello, and Event Horizon. And any others that you wanted to just recommend?
I just chucked John Wick in there because it's awesome.
Yeah, Boys in the Hood, definitely check out, and Tuskegee Airmen, really like that. But we've been heaping praise on a lot of his performances and a lot of the films. Like, said it at the beginning, I'll say it again, I think he might be one of the most underrated actors out there. Really, so good. Sort of, people forget how good he is.
Yeah, go and rewatch Apocalypse Now.
Yeah, we're thinking of him.
14 years old.
The next episode, we're going to be doing Sigourney Weaver.
Right, yeah.
And which I announced a few episodes ago.
Yep.
And I'll tell you what her top four are. I'd like to know if you've seen any of these.
Okay.
So currently her IMDb known fours are Avatar.
Yeah, I've seen that.
Alien.
Yeah.
Alien Resurrection.
Yeah.
No, you haven't.
Oh, no, I haven't.
Yeah, I knew. I thought that's the one you haven't seen.
Yeah.
so you can finally watch Alien Resurrection. It's not very good. And Galaxy Quest.
Yes, we have seen that.
So, well, we watched that for the Sam Rockwell episode.
We did, yeah. Double whammy.
So, yeah, I've seen all four of those. I'm really, really looking forward to watching some films I haven't seen with Sigourney Weaver.
Yeah. They've not changed either. So, I think maybe she's quite predictable. Like, they stick around.
So, I find it weird that Resurrection is the one. That, of all the other Alien films she's been in, Resurrection's the one that is in that top four, though. Weird. That's going to be changing, don't you worry.
Have you seen everything that's in filming and pre-production?
Like all the Avatar films, right? Like Avatar, yeah.
That's insane. Okay, so...
So that's our next episode. That should be out in January. And after that, Becca, do you want to tell us what your choice is for your next actor?
I'm going to do Biggie. I'm going to do Leonardo DiCaprio.
Oh, God, this is going to be... a long one. This is actually our most requested episode to do.
Has
actually been requested a few times.
Whoa.
And we sort of mentioned Leo on a few of our previous episodes anyway.
Right.
So yeah, that is a biggie.
I can finally watch The Revenant.
Oh yeah, well, I've seen that. Oh yeah, I recommend watching that. There's a lot of good Leo films.
So yeah.
So yeah, join us in Jan. We'll talk about Sigourney Weaver, which should be a fun one. And then after that, biggie, Leo DiCaprio.
Yay.
So in the meantime,
so awesome.
If you want to contact us, it's knownforpod@gmail.com. And that's about it. You can find me on Twitter. I'm at Bob Shoy. That's at BOBSHOY. Is there anything else? You don't do Twitter, do you?
No.
You don't want to promote yourself in any way?
If there's any like Sigourney stuff you'd recommend or any Leo films.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Like,
give us a shout.
You've got those two to give us any recommendations for. Always really appreciate recommendations. Let us know your favourites from Lawrence Fishburne or ones that we should have watched that we didn't. Ones you'd recommend for the next two episodes. And any other emails. It's always nice to hear from listeners.
Yep. Cool. Thanks for listening.
So yeah, thanks for listening and see you on the next episode.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.